Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and today we're starting a weekly series for the month of January on parenting taboos. You might remember Rufus Griscom, the founder of Babbel.com, who came on the show recently to talk about the bad parent column on that site. This is the taboo-smashing confession section for parents to discuss without judgment the unspoken realities of parenting. They put together a compilation of bad parent columns in a book called Dirt is Good for You, True Stories of Surviving Parenthood. So each week in January, we're going to delve into one of those taboos and have real conversations about the things that we're told we must not say as parents. This week, ambivalent parenting. Did you have a not-so-welcome pregnancy, perhaps, or did you become a parent reluctantly? Do you resent your kid or spouse because of it? Did it take a while to fall in love with your kid? Give us a call. No judgments, just discussion. And Rufus Griscom, thanks for doing this with us. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And our listeners, our phone number 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And I want to play a clip from a call that we got the last time Rufus was here. This is George in Manhattan, who called to tell us that he was ambivalent as a parent and still is, even as his kid is 10 years old.
Wasn't planning on having children. My wife decided that she really needed to do that, so we did that. And, you know, it's been really a difficult road, but, you know, we're doing it, and it's working fine, but it's been really hard. And to tell the truth, I could have done without it, and I don't think I'd ever say that to anybody who's got kids.
And Rufus, you can hear the ambivalence in his voice, and to say that you could have done without is a pretty shocking thing to say out loud. You certainly don't want to say it to your kids, but not an uncommon feeling.
It really is. It really is. Yeah, I think there's kind of a forced cheeriness around parenthood in American culture, that you can't say anything negative about, you know, your experiences with kids without sounding ungrateful or even unhuman, because this, you know, defines us so much.
Here's a post from our website right away. Sebastian from Manhattan. It took me 6 months to feel bonded with my first son. I felt very guilty about that. I'm an American, and we were working in Beijing back then, 1985, and I shared that news with another businessman there, and he confessed that it also took him a long time to feel like a father. By the time my second son was born in 92 back here in New York City, for several months I kept wondering, there are three people in our family. What's this new person still doing here? I wasn't feeling guilty about that. I knew it would pass and that I'd take him into my heart eventually, which happened. I'm very close with both of them now.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most common things, which is there's a lot of people probably do have this experience of the babies put in their arms in the hospital, and it's like a Mack truck of love just ran them over. They're just, you know, and you hear people say this, it was the most powerful moment in my entire life. And my personal experience was, it was surreal, it was extraordinary, I was very memorable, but a lot of the reaction was, are you sure this is my kid? It was all, you know. And for me, it has been, I've just fallen more and more in love with my sons, you know, every week that passes. But it did take a number of months to really to feel that. And since you feel like you can't say that, I think that's a very common experience.
Carrie Fisher, a contributor to the Bad Parent column, wrote a piece called The Not-So-Happy Accident, I Wish I Wasn't Pregnant. The title itself, you know, will suffice. There are a couple of other posts about how the baby comes between parents. One is written by a pregnant woman who's already jealous of her daughter because of the forthcoming bond that the baby will have with the father. And while some people wrote in to thank the author of the piece for her honesty, several people wrote things like this. The entire article made me roll my eyes. Sure, it's very emotional and very, quote, powerful if you find power in the disempowering Freudian notion that there is an inevitable electro war between a parent and child. You are the adult writes this poster, being jealous of a special bond between another parent and child to this extent is so pathetic. So it's hard to do this without judgment, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. And very consistently, all these bad parent columns that we post on Babbel.com generate a lot of feedback and big kind of turf wars back and forth between the those who say, this is, thank you so much for saying this, it's therapeutic to hear, and those who say, you know, this is, you know, you're basically a whiny adolescent, you know, grow up, this is what it means to be a parent.
Jim in Westbury, you're on WNYC with Rufus Griscom. Hi.
How you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for calling. I know this can take some courage.
Well, it's an odd thing. I mean, I find myself in the same shoes, I believe, I sort of find myself in the same shoes that my father was in. I have a five-year-old son who's on the autistic spectrum, which is even more horrifying to admit. But I find myself just completely overburdened sometimes with the way that he has monopolized my wife. I mean, I work and my wife is a stay-at-home mom, and it's really fascinating to me to find myself in the exact same shoes that my father was in, that I felt growing up as a child, my father having sort of resented my existence or having taken away his wife or my mother.
Does it help you, Jim, to acknowledge it and to realize the pattern?
Well, it helps me understand where my father was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure. I mean, obviously there are times when I feel as though I don't feel that. I certainly love my son, and I love spending time with him. But it's just an interesting acknowledgement to the idea of, oh, well, this is, I'll be sitting sometimes and think, oh, well, this is where my father was when he left, you know.
And if it helps, Jim, another post on Bad Parent is written by a working mom whose husband stays home with the kids, and it's about the resentment that comes with that dynamic. So it can go both ways.
Yeah, I have no doubt that it's definitely not a thing that wouldn't cross the sexual boundary.
Do you have trouble admitting this? I mean, here you are on the radio, but it's sort of, you know, anonymous compared to if you were telling your best friend or your relatives.
Yeah, and I guess that's maybe why I called in, because I don't really talk to anybody about this. It's one of those things that it's not. Because of the taboo nature of you not really wanting to say such things out loud, I haven't really said that out loud to anybody.
So stay there for a minute, Jim. And Rufus, what's the use of articulating these kinds of things? Can it wound the spouses and the children in these instances without actually helping the person who's having the feelings? Why do you curate these kinds of things in the first place?
To me, and to us here at Babbel, that it's incredibly important that people have these conversations. That we think that the taboos around parenting are the most powerful taboos in our culture. These days, you can say anything you want about sex. You can say anything you want about just about anything, but you can't say what some of these folks are saying now, which is, gosh, you know, sometimes I wonder, you know, if I should have had kids, or you know, this is a deeply challenging experience that causes me to resent my child sometimes. Or, I mean, it's at the very top of the list of taboos. I think it's very therapeutic for people to talk it through and feel comfortable sharing it, because what you learn very quickly is that a lot of people feel this way.
And probably helps keep the bond strong, Jim, do you think, that you can acknowledge it as openly as you do, at least to yourself?
Well, it's certainly one of the things that drives me to keep going every day. The idea that, oh, well, this is why my father and my mother really didn't get along very well. And I'm fairly certain that's the reason. It's not so much that I don't like being a parent. I think it's more the relationship with my wife has changed so dramatically. I mean, there's nothing, it's not even resembling anything like the relationship I had with my wife before having children. So it's the loss of that, I think, more than the resentment I feel towards the child, because he's not at fault in this situation, that he didn't ask to be born.
Right.
So it's not his fault, but at the same time, it does sort of rest me at night to know that okay, so this is what my father was feeling.
Yeah.
This is certainly what
Jim,
he went through.
Jim, thank you very much for your call. We really appreciate
certainly.
It. Chris in Armonk, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Brian. You know, I took to parenting like a duck takes to water. I've loved every second of it. But I won't deny the fact that when we had our first child, my wife and I had our first child, I wanted to have a girl. And we had a girl. Wonderful. Now, when we had our second and third, we had a boy and then a girl. And in my heart, before I even had children, I knew that I was preferential to girls. And I've had to struggle trying to treat my middle boy with the same love and care that that's come so easily to me with the girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never tell him that, of course. And my wife has pointed it out to me, and I wouldn't even tell her.
You deny it.
But it is like an inner struggle for me.
You deny it to your wife?
No, it's not so much deny it. Maybe I do deny it, because I wouldn't. Yes. I don't really want to say to her that I feel a preference, because I don't want to admit it to myself. But I do feel it a little bit, and I struggle with it. There are times where I've said, you know, I've stepped back and said, I've got to correct this.
And there's another taboo, and you've gone and said it. And we hear the tension, how you were kind of on the fence of saying whether you deny it to your wife, and then you said, well, and sometimes I deny it to myself.
Right.
And now you've said it out loud. When was the last time you said it out loud?
Well, I've only said it to myself. I've talked about it to myself. I've realized it, and I've said, you know, I've got to correct this.
So, Rufus Griscom, here's a wonderful example of the kind of thing that the Bad Parent column enables, now our little radio version of it today. What does Chris do with it?
Yeah, and this is on our I wanted a girl, but I got a boy, or vice versa, is on our top five list of things you can't say. In fact, and one of the stories in this book is precisely that. I wanted a girl, but I got a boy. And, you know, I think our view is just that talking it through and giving it voice is a very healthy process, and you can better embrace all the great things about having a boy, having you know, talked it through.
And Chris, go out there and love up your boy. Good, and thank
right,
you
I'm
for
doing
calling.
That, Brian.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Kara in Hackensack, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kara.
Hi. When I was married for 6 years and we got pregnant, I had not been planning on having kids. We had discussed it, and we weren't really going to do it. And so it happened. Everyone in the family was ecstatic. This is the greatest thing ever. It was going to be the first grandkid. People were over the moon, and I was just devastated. I was terrified that I would not be a good mother, that I wouldn't know how to, you know, to do these things, how to nurture a kid. I was not excited. I was afraid, upset, and people don't want to hear that from a pregnant woman. A pregnant woman is supposed to be excited. This is the greatest thing. This is your whole purpose in life. And I basically lied to every single person that I talked to for the entire 37 weeks of my pregnancy about, yeah, no, I can't wait any day now. This is the greatest thing ever. And I was terrified that when my daughter was born that, you know, this would be a problem and that I would have the same kind of, you know, ambivalence and resentment towards her, which I'm happy to say was not the case. She's in the background right now. And I love being a mother, but being pregnant and not wanting to be pregnant was terrifying. I felt really alone. I knew that, like lots of my friends had spent, you know, $20,000, $30,000 on IVF and couldn't get pregnant. And here I am not wanting to be pregnant. So
felt guilty on top of everything else.
Yeah, I did. I felt terrible. I knew people that would, you know, they would give their limbs, they would give anything to be able to be in my position. And I was like, why is this happening to me? Like I don't understand how this level of birth control failure could occur, you know? Like, and it was really hard because, you know, people just, they want you to be happy and they don't expect that someone who's, you know, glowing with pregnancy is going to be anything other than ecstatic. Whereas I was uncomfortable, I was afraid, I was really depressed, and you know, society doesn't think it's okay for a pregnant woman to be sad. You know, you're supposed to be happy. This is the greatest time of your life.
And despite all those feelings during pregnancy, when the baby was born, pop, you were ecstatic to have the kid?
I was really, really happy to not be pregnant. I had a suction, and I remember them saying, you know, she's halfway out. And I said, oh, thank God I'm not pregnant anymore. And they said, well, you're still a little bit pregnant. And once she was totally out, just a second, sweetie, it was 100% different. And I'm very grateful for that, that I love being a mother, but the actual pregnancy part was terrifying. And I love the idea of her having, you know, a sibling, but I don't know that I could go through another pregnancy.
Wow. Rufus, you hear this one?
Yeah, I think she's made an amazing point, which is that all the challenges, the fertility challenges that our generation is having, because so many of us are having kids later, makes it that much more difficult to sound anything other than grateful, you know, to be pregnant. And there are a couple stories in our book about, you know, right along the same line. And in fact, my wife and I, when we got pregnant the second time, we're sort of really stressed out and didn't feel ready to have a second child, and then we lost the second child. We had a miscarriage, and we felt horribly guilty that our sort of negative thoughts about and lack of gratitude was sort of being punished in some fashion. Not that we're
And Kara, thanks for calling, and your baby made her radio debut today, so remember this day. And that's where we have to leave it for today with Rufus Griscom from Babbel.com and author of the book, Dirt is Good for You, True Stories of Surviving Parenthood. But he's going to join us every Thursday this month with more tales from the Bad Parent column on different topics and your calls in addition. What do we have planned for next week? Did we settle it out already? I don't remember.
I don't know that we've settled on it. There's so many good topics. We've got, you know, overachievers, bribing kids, sibling rivalries, and a number of subjects.
All right. We'll figure out which to do next week, and we'll break some more taboos. Rufus, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.